This is Get Lit with Literature. This is Monk. You can find out more at the website. And this is part two. Not sure how many parts. This could be it. I'm not sure. It's kind of week by week thing. The Rape of the Mind, The Psychology of Thought Control, Menticide, and Brainwashing by Juiced A.M. Mirlu, M.D. Published by the Universal Library, Grosset and Dunlap. 1956. First reprinting, 2009, updated 2016. As I mentioned in part one, there's a lot of stuff in the book, so I'm just gonna skim down my highlighted notes in the back of the book and read a few quotes. And that's the plan for today. One thing this has made me more aware of when just seeing people in general is, I don't mean this to sound too clinical, but like, seeing people as like the results and effects of their childhood, that realizing that everybody has a kind of package deal that they bring with them. And I think sometimes, I know I've personally gotten into, you know, struggles with people when I later realized, oh yeah, they got some kind of long-term program or issue going on. As we all do to some degree. But turning point is, instead of the reactive behavior just on automatic autopilot, is learning first of all, becoming conscious of those behaviors, and then learning from them and making conscious choice to not react in the same way we may have reacted as a four-year-old when we didn't get our ice cream. Some of the tactics mentioned are fear, psychological shock, and illogic. No brainwashing is possible without totalitarian thinking. Here's a quote. Other tactics: fear, Pavlovian conditioning, repeated suggestion. That's my sense of humor. Deconditioning through boredom and physical degradation. Conforming. And here's a big one, fear of spontaneous living. That seems a huge one that I can observe in suburbia, where people kind of get in their car, they go to their destination, they get out, they make a little chit-chat, they get back in the car, they go home, they turn on the gadget, whatever they do, I don't know, but like spontaneous living, that's outside the programming, outside the box, open to the spur of the moment. The intuition, the spirit guided, the message from the bird that just flew up past your face. There's a mass delusion that happens, and there's individual level of things that happen. Some of that preying, P-R-E-Y, is on immature feelings from lack, frustrations, deprivations, and dissatisfaction, while the power trippers are venting and compensating. So the frustrations, deprivations, and dissatisfactions, that was highlighted to me as one of the signs of fascism. And I'm not making labels. I'm not trying to take sides. You got to contextualize everything nowadays so people don't label you. Because one of the appeals of Trump, because of his let's say, boisterous method of speaking, and because the economy was so bad, he preyed on the, riled people up to compensate for the economic frustrations, deprivations, and dissatisfactions. He's not the first, and sadly probably won't be the last. And there's actually some, I'll say this because I always have to say this when I talk to people, politics, which I don't talk too much, there's actually some things I like about Trump, or some things he said or did that I say, that's true, or I don't disagree. It doesn't mean I like him overall, but I'm just saying, so I don't get labeled or don't get people saying, yeah, I like what you said about Trump. There are roots of submissiveness and conformity. Another major issue throughout the book is the male authority figure. Again, you could say that's about Trump or even about Biden as a kind of bumbling grandfather. It's sort of in a pseudo way, it's the opposite male authority figure as Trump. And then there's the projecting onto others instead of doing the inner work. That can often have a lot to do with parental issues of conforming and rebelling in authority figures. Another big trick is to trick people away from spirit and the earth and all the relations. says later on, most of the causes of delusions are not purely organic, however. The same effect of regression may be produced by hypnosis and mass hypnosis, which by dislocating the higher forms of alert consciousness, reduce the subject to a, quote, primitive stage. If awareness and reality confrontation become rigid and automatic, if man does not look for alert and repeated verifications of what he finds in the world, he may develop delusions, ideas not adapted to the reality situation. I like that a lot, the alert and repeated verification systems. Now, I think about that as, you know, as one begins to become conscious, that is a constant ongoing effort of, and it's every day and no matter what, repeated, unless you're in the zombie hypnotic zone, repeated alert and repeated verifications. Did I lock the door? Did I say something to that person that was cool? Was I insulting? Is it gonna thunderstorm? Should I close the window? Oh no, it's not. You know, all that goes on all day. At some degree. So when that kind of awareness and participatory action, that interrelationship organically with the earth and the unseen worlds, when that gets dislocated or shut off, that's another main way that people become conformist and submissive and automatons and zombie brainwashed. One of the delusions is a loss of independent, verifiable reality. Sometimes people say, well, you know, there's just many truths out there, but sometimes there is a truth. Is it raining? Yes, it's raining. A truth. Another tactic is manipulating dissatisfaction and grudges and the urge to be accepted. Weak, ambitious, disgruntled, frustrated, then given a sense of importance. So those are probably recognizable. We see those sometimes in you know, the way you could be talked to, the way that politicians in general talk to, and the way that advertisements in general talk to, and the way that media kind of talk to, it's all, many of those tactics get employed. Given a sense of importance. I know when I first started doing, you know, writing and publishing, you know, to get that poem, to get that email, your poem has been selected to be published in our anthology. Wow. Of course, it is exciting, but also there's a level of kind of validation, or now I'm an okay person thing, and that's what those things prey upon. You too can fill in the blank. So it's buyer beware. Also, what gets played upon is a confusion of loyalties. Now, that's a big one, because you know, that can cause troubles if one is loyal to one's family, but then, you know, some speaker accentuates the loyalty to one's country, that could convince someone to become a soldier, or could convince someone to do something that is disloyal to one's family and friends. Yeah, Jay. Here's the other one. The personal need to be a pioneer or a martyr, often instilled by the unconscious need to suffer, may lead to a private messianic delusion and cause an attack on the traditional values of the group. Many groups consider such extremism as treacherous behavior. Another form of self-betrayal may be caused by the inability to grasp the complexity of the real world. Many people have been seduced into unstable behavior and even disloyalty through lack of comprehension of these complexities and through the need to find a single, all-embracing, easy answer to the problems of human life. Who gives them the simple myth to believe in? The Nazis seduced nearly all of Germany into a form of ideological treason in this way. Treason may also be a paradoxical reaction to a deep-seated neurotic sense of guilt. The neurotic strategy of accumulating more guilt coupled with the consequent development of an inner need for punishment are often the basic causes of criminal action. Now that's one of those are the ones that make me think. The need for punishment are often the basic causes of criminal action. Like, is that what makes, you know, someone in the proverbial getaway car chase, and the car crashes, and then the person feels a sense of relief that, you know, the game is up? Is that, you know, an inner need for punishment? But I think those two, in the U.S., those words get bandied about. Justice, liberty, equality, democracy. People throw those words about like nothing. And I think those, if you listen to politicians, you will. And I guarantee you'll hear it again. That the, whatever the next coming election is, you will hear those words, or almost verbatim. And those are like emotional button pushers, you know, blah, blah, blah. If you care about justice, of course I care about justice, but am I going to buy the, you know, the lines, unless there's something to them? Unlikely. The important psychological implication of every form of harsh compulsive training and indoctrination is that it fits into the totalitarian pattern. Moreover, the totalitarian inquisitors don't need to use physical torture in order to uncover the secrets of man's mind, although they may use these methods for their private pleasure. On the contrary, the enemy counted just as much on friendly gestures and special privileges to seduce the hungry, weakened POWs into confession. What the inquisitors especially require in order to succeed is that the enemy have a weak personality, that he be a dumbbell with a soldier's need to conform, that he be ridden with anxiety and lacking in patience. The brainwashing inquisitor doesn't need torture. Physical torture will often strengthen resistance against the inquisitor, while isolation alone can accomplish his objectives. So it's torture and seduction are two sides of the coin, and in my studied opinion, and I've written about it, the U.S. is a quote master in the seduction, because all the goodies, all the bennies, is what, again, the selective viewing, which is also mentioned in this book, the selective viewing is that if you study any little bit of history and of the history of the land of Turtle Island, or, as I often mention, Galeano's book, 5 Centuries of the Pillage of a Continent in South America, you will see that the seductions are based on resources and luxuries that are based at the expense of another people's being put down and not having access to those bennies and luxuries, and often sometimes that requires torture and slave labor. So the torture and slave labor is also out of sight, out of mind, while the seduction happens right before one's eyes. So there's a line from a Neil song that I sing and have often sung to myself. Keep an eye out for the greedy hand. Keep an eye out for the greedy hand. Greedy hand. You know, oh, it looks so good. I want one more. No, I don't. Many of these things can be looked on as the challenges and resistance that helps to strengthen the character, inner strength, in building up a resistance. And here towards the end of the book, spontaneous enthusiasm and mutual acceptance are good. And I'll read a few quotes, and that ought to wrap it up for this episode. It is obviously easier to be the inquisitor than the victim, not only because the inquisitor may be temporarily safe from mental and physical destruction, but also because it is simpler to punish others for what we feel as criminal in ourselves than it is to face up to our own hidden sense of guilt. Committing menticide is the lesser crime of aggression, which covers up the deeper crime of unresolved hatred and destruction. That could also be summed up as the Carl Jungian shadow. Instead of facing one's own shadow, one projects that shadow out onto others. And in the big trauma picture, those types in power positions then project it out to countries and to virtually everybody in the world. Hence the also mentioned last week, the doctrine of Christian discovery based on domination. Here's mass conditioning through speech. According to official Pavlovian psychology, human speech is also a conditioned reflex activity. Pavlov distinguished between stimuli of the first order, which condition men and animals directly, and stimuli of the second order with weaker and more complicated conditioning qualities. In this so-called second signal system, verbal cues replaced the original psychic physical sound stimulus. Pavlov himself did not give much attention to the second signal system. It was especially after Stalin's publication in 1950 on the significance of linguistics for mass indoctrination, as quoted by Dobrogiev, that the Russian psychologists began to do work in this area. In his letter, Stalin followed Engel's theory that language is the characteristic human bit of adaptive equipment, that tone and sound in speech have a conditioning quality is something we can verify from our own experience in listening to or in giving commands or in dealing with our pets. Even the symbolic and semantic meaning of words can acquire a conditioning quality. The word traitor, for example, provokes direct feelings and reactions in the minds of those who hear it spoken, even if this discriminatory label is being applied dishonestly. So like if I say somebody is a traitor, even if I'm not telling the truth, you would immediately feel like, oh, traitor, go get him. That's the kind of conditioning he's saying that people would tend to do. You might not. In the Pavlovian strategy, terrorizing force can finally be replaced by a new organization of the means of communication. Ready-made opinions can be distributed day by day through press, radio, and so on, again and again, until they reach the nerve cell and implant fixed pattern of thought in the brain. Consequently, guided public opinion is the result, according to Pavlovian theoreticians, of good propaganda technique in the polls. Yet the polls may only count what people pretend to think and believe, because it is dangerous for them to do otherwise. Such is the Pavlovian device. Repeat mechanically your assumptions and suggestions. Diminish the opportunity of communicating dissent and opposition. This is the simple formula for political conditioning of the masses. This is also the actual ideal of some of our public relations machines, who thus hope to manipulate the public into buying a special soap or voting for a special party. And this is true. You can look it up. Barack Obama's election campaign won an award. I think it was like Advertising Age Award for the year or whatever it was. You can look it up. But the political campaign actually won an award for advertising of the year. And another quote: for as Spinoza sensed, and as the great psychologist Sigmund Freud later demonstrated, people are not the rational creatures that they think they are. In the unconscious, that vast storehouse of deeply buried memories, emotions, and strivings, lie many infantile and irrational yearnings, which constantly influence the conscious acts. All of us are governed to some degree by this hidden tyrant and by the conflict between our reason and our emotions. I will also add, because Ray Bradbury's birthday was recently, and I was thinking about doing a show, but I've mentioned him before, because he's one of the great influences personally on my writings and other people's, and that was one of his things, is that the vast storehouse, the unconscious, is in a positive way the storehouse for one's writings, and even taking one's, you know, positive or negative emotions and putting that into creative writing. He mentions like having a character, having a topic, and expressing what you love about it, what you hate about it, and taking sides and this and that. And I will wrap this up on this wonderfully positive anecdote. Even in laboratory animals, we have found that effective goal-directedness can spoil the Pavlovian experiment. When, during a bell food training session, the dog's beloved master entered the room, the animal lost all its previous conditioning and began to bark excitedly. Here is a simple example of an age-old truth: love and laughter break through all rigid conditioning. The rigid automaton cannot exist without spontaneous self-expression. Apparently, the fact that the dog's spontaneous affection for his master could ruin all the mechanical calculations and manipulations never occurred to Pavlov's totalitarian students. Thus, automaton or free alert, spontaneous heart-mind. Those are the ultimate choices, I think. Automaton or free alert heart, mind, open to spontaneity, love, and laughter. Thank you for listening, and be well.